Good morning. Welcome into Locked On Patriots for Tuesday, May 15th, 2018. Mark Schofield back in the big chair for your Tuesday edition of Locked On Patriots. Reminder to follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Follow the work over at InsideThePylon.com, where I'm one of the head writers. Also follow the work at ProFootballWeekly.com. If you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw a video I posted yesterday breaking down a great no-throw play from Tom Brady. So definitely, if you're not doing it, follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. You see more and more stuff like that on the timeline every day. Also, you can check out the video work, youtube.com/InsideThePylon. A couple of things on tap today. We're going to talk play five of our top 10 offensive plays of the 2017 season. We're going to talk some Quan when we get to the football and film segment. But first, for those of you that might not remember this, your boy here, your host, your fearless leader of the Locked On Patriots podcast wears many hats in life. One hat he wore in a former life was that of a lawyer. So where else should we start than with the Supreme Court of the United States? How's that for a little Tuesday topic for you? The reason being, PAPSA. That's the Professional and American Sports Protection Act. This was an act that generally made it unlawful for a state to, quote, authorize sports gambling schemes. This was challenged initially by none other than Governor Chris Christie of the state of New Jersey, then taken over by new governor Philip Murphy against the NCAA et al. And basically, the underlying current of this entire case was whether Congress could tell the individual states that they could not authorize sports gambling schemes. Because basically what the law said was this. The law said, this PAPSA law, which was passed years ago, said that it was unlawful for a state or its subdivisions to sponsor, operate, advertise, promote, license, or authorize by law or compact a lottery, sweepstakes, or other betting, gambling, or wager scheme based on competitive sporting events. That's what the law said. And when this was initially passed, the law allowed a couple of states to sort of grandfather in, among them New Jersey. New Jersey decided not to. But then in 2012, the state legislature approved an amendment to the state constitution, giving the New Jersey legislature, approved an amendment to the state constitution, giving the New Jersey legislature the authority to legalize sports gambling schemes in Atlantic City and at horse racing tracks. So the legislature did that. The NCAA and three professional sports leagues brought an action in federal court against New Jersey's governor and other state officials, trying to get them to stop that. That case ended up striking down the law in New Jersey. But in 2014, the New Jersey state legislature enacted a new law repealing state law provisions that prohibited such gambling schemes. And that's the case that made it to the Supreme Court. And basically what the Supreme Court held yesterday in a 6-3 decision was that that law in question was unconstitutional. Because basically what the court found was that that law basically had Congress telling the states what they could not do. And that's up to the states. If Congress wants to completely ban sports betting, they can do that. But they can't tell Congress what Congress cannot tell the individual states what those state legislatures can and cannot do. And that's what this law did. And Justice Samuel Alito, who wrote the opinion for the court, basically said, quote, Congress can regulate sports gambling directly, but if it elects not to do so, each state is free to act on its own. Our job is to interpret the law Congress has enacted and decide whether it is consistent with the Constitution. PAPSA is not. PAPSA regulates state government's regulation of their citizens. The Constitution gives Congress no such power. And interestingly enough, this came down as a 6-3 decision. As I said, Justice Alito wrote the opinion, joined by Chief Justice Roberts. Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Kagan, and Gorsuch all joined. Justice Breyer joined as to all but one part of the opinion. Justice Thomas filed an concurring opinion. Justice Breyer concurred in part and dissented in part. Justice Ginsburg filed a dissenting opinion in which Justice Sotomayor joined. It was basically a 6-3 decision. If you want to put that in sort of sports terms, in today's sort of divided court, I'd say a 6-3 decision is akin to a 10-point win in football. Like, it's not a one-score game, but it's not really a blowout, but it's kind of a bigger win than you might expect. So what does this mean? Well, it means states are now sort of free to come up with situations where they can now legalize gambling and sports gambling in their states. And you're going to see that start to happen. As a matter of fact, some states have already basically said that they're on track to do it within the next couple of weeks. Mississippi and West Virginia, I believe, are the two states that are probably closest from everything that I've read to enacting sort of sports betting at their casinos. Other casinos, such as in New York State near Utica, are probably going to get in on this. You might see states from coast to coast sort of get in on this and start legalizing state-authorized sport gambling. New Jersey, of course, you know, as they were the heart of this opinion, will probably be in there. Delaware, Mississippi, New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, other states such as Maryland as well. What does it mean for the leagues? Well, the leagues are starting to tread a little bit lightly around this. They want to see sort of some regulation that would be put into place. You know, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, basically said that we may remain in favor of a federal framework that would provide a uniform approach to sports gambling in states that choose to permit it, but we will remain active in ongoing discussions with state legislatures. Regardless of the particulars of any future sports betting law, the integrity of our game remains our highest priority. The NFL did release a statement saying the NFL's long-standing and unwavering commitment to protecting the integrity of our game remains absolute. Congress has long recognized the potential harms posed by sports betting to the integrity of sporting contests and the public confidence in these events. Given that history, we intend to call on Congress again, this time to enact a core regulatory framework for legalized sports betting. We also will work closely with our clubs to ensure that any state efforts that move forward in the meantime protect our fans and the integrity of the game. So the shift that you're going to see is the leagues asking for Congress to now step in and say, okay, we've got to make this uniform from state to state. You know, because we can't have a situation where some states allow it, other states don't, and there's confusion across the board. And plus, the leagues do want some sort of protections in place to protect the integrity of the game. There will be situations where you might, you know, for example, prop bets on who's going to be the first player to commit a foul in a basketball game. That's not really going to affect the final outcome, but you could see situations where, hypothetically, somebody could make money move in one way or another by committing a foul or not committing a foul. You know, and that calls into question the integrity of some of these things. So Congress will want to step in. There's already movement at the congressional level. Republican Senator Orrin Hatch from the state of Utah has said that he will introduce a new sports gambling legislation after the Supreme Court struck down the PAPSA law, which he was one of the original sponsors of back in 1992. Hatch was quoted on Monday saying that the problems posed by sports betting are much the same as they were 25 years ago. Hatch went on to say, "The rapid rise of the internet means that sports betting across state lines is now just a click away. We cannot allow this practice to proliferate amid uneven enforcement and a patchwork race to the regulatory bottom." So that's what's going to happen next. The Congress is going to try to step in. Hatch said that his bill will establish fundamental standards, including trying to protect consumers in states that decide not to legalize sports betting and upholding the integrity of sports. Another interesting thing to consider is for sites like DraftKings and FanDuel that have sort of been on the fringe of sports betting, obviously with the daily fantasy stuff, they've already indicated they want to get into this as well. So that's something interesting to watch. And finally, the content that's going to be created as a result of this. There was an interesting discussion on Twitter over the weekend or so that sort of got into the future of football content and where it's going to go. And there are a lot of people, myself included, that do a lot of X's and O's work. And we've often wondered, is it ever going to be a bigger market for that? If you've listened to the show, if you're going to listen to the rest of the show, you know that there's going to be some X's and O's discussion. Well, if you now have a framework where you can, you know, include potentially gambling on games in that sort of discussion, there might be an even bigger market for it. So it's an interesting decision. It's an interesting sort of time in the sports world, in the sports business world. And I felt that, look, given my background and the fact that it is, you know, May, might as well talk about it at the outset. Gives me a chance to put my lawyer hat back on just for a couple of minutes, just put my toe back in that water and then take it out really quickly because, you know, don't want to do that anymore. Up next, we're going to talk play five on our countdown of the top 10 offensive plays of 2017. And later, Quan. That's ahead with me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield back with you now on this Tuesday edition of Locked On Patriots. And we have now reached the top five, my top five offensive plays of the 2017 season. And the play we're going to talk about today wasn't really in a critical moment, but it's still one of the better plays I saw from this offense in the 2017 season. This came from New England's victory over the Oakland Raiders down in Mexico. It's a play from early in the third quarter. The Patriots already out to a 17-0 lead, facing a 1st-and-10 on their own 36-yard line. The Patriots put Tom Brady in the shotgun, Danny Amendola, Robert Gronkowski in a tight slot to the left, while Dwayne Allen is in the wing and Brandon Cooks is in the outside on the right side of the formation. The Raiders counter with their 4-2-5 nickel defense, and they show cover three in the secondary. That's a three deep look with a safety in the middle of the field and then each corner responsible for an outside third. Brandon Cooks is going to run sort of a double move, an out and up against rookie cornerback slash safety Obi Melanfanu, and well, Tom Brady is going to take a deep shot here. Here they're going to go long again. Open is Cooks. Cooks, no one near him. Touchdown, New England.
Longest pass play of the season for Brady and the Patriots. 64 yards to Brandon Cooks.
This is a bust. You got the rookie right here. One of his first games playing, and he's got no help over the top. See how there's no safety? You got to run deep with him. Why are you down here? There's nobody helping you.
Jim Nantz, Tony Romo from CBS on the call. And as you heard Romo there, somewhat exasperated at the end of that call, Melanfanu just simply busted on the play. As I described, it's a three-deep coverage. Melanfanu was responsible for the deep outside third. He basically gives up when Cooks shows the double move. He doesn't get depth on it. He's basically planted as soft zone underneath coverage. He doesn't get any depth at all on his route, on his coverage, excuse me. And Cooks just runs right by him. Free safety's in a bind. He can't rotate over in time because he has another vertical route on the other side that he has to contend with. And this is a play that double out and up that the Patriots showed early in the preseason. I remember breaking it down early in the preseason from one of their preseason games, talking about how the Patriots looked to add sort of a vertical element to their offense. It was a double out and up between Hogan and Brandon Cooks. I believe Brady hit Hogan on the vertical route for a touchdown in that preseason game. And I remember breaking it down for you here on Locked On Patriots, showing that, look, these are the kinds of routes that they're going to want to incorporate into their offense with the addition of Brandon Cooks. And we saw it in full effect on this play. Cooks gets vertical, Melanfanu doesn't gain any depth at all, doesn't run with him. Safety can't rotate over because not only does he have the vertical route on the other side to deal with in the form of the out and up from Danny Amendola, he also has a seam slash post route from Rob Gronkowski. So you've got two vertical routes coming at you from the right side, the one coming at you from the left. As a free safety, you're going to have to stay home, especially when Robert Gronkowski is running up the seam in your direction. Melanfanu's got to be better in that situation. He wasn't. Brady and Cooks took advantage of it. And as you heard, at that point in the season, their longest pass play of the year, the 64-yard touchdown from Tom Brady to Brandon Cooks, my fifth overall best play from the Patriots offense in the 2017 season. We got four more plays to come, four incredible moments, four incredible plays from the rest of the 2017 season. If you haven't listened to these other episodes, if you want to just get caught up, you can go back and listen to them. If not, play 10 was a play from Brady to James White in their victory against Atlanta on Sunday night. Play 9 was a touchdown pass in the red zone from Brady to Chris Hogan against Tampa Bay that Thursday night game when things were trying to get settled here in New England. Play 8, Brady to Gronkowski in Super Bowl 52, the play that gave the Patriots their short-lived lead, their only lead of the Super Bowl 52. Play 7, Brady to Gronkowski in their first game against the Jets early in the third quarter to give the Patriots a 7-point lead. Play 6, Brady to Chris Hogan in the divisional round against the Tennessee Titans on a well-designed play that got Hogan open in the middle of the field, back of the end zone. And as you just heard there, play 5, Brady to Brandon Cooks, that 64-yard pass against the Oakland Raiders down in Mexico. Up next, we're going to close out the show with our next installment of Football in Film, talking about the ambassador of Quan. That's ahead with me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots.
I am a role model, Jerry. I have a family to support. Hear me? I want to stay in Arizona. I want my new contract. But I like you. Yes, I like you, Jerry. My wife likes you. You're good to my wife. I will stay with you.
That's great. I'm very happy.
Are you listening?
Yes.
That's what I'm going to do for you. God bless you, Jerry. But this is what you're going to do for me. You listen? Jerry?
Yeah, what can I do for you, Rod? You just tell me, what can I do for you?
It's a very personal, very important thing. Hell, it's a family motto. Are you ready, Jerry?
I'm ready.
Just want to make sure you're ready, brother. Here it is. Show me the money.
Show you the money.
Oh, no, you can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it what you would mean it, brother. Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Not show you. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
Louder! Show me the money!
That's it, brother, but you got to yell that shit!
Show me the money!
I need to feel you, Jerry!
Show me the money!
Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
Obviously, that right there, Tom Cruise, Cuba Gooding Jr. from 1996's Jerry Maguire, the movie about Jerry Maguire, a super agent portrayed by Tom Cruise and loosely based on the life of current super agent Lee Steinberg. That scene, of course, where Jerry Maguire, after having sort of this moment of clarity, gives a memo to the rest of his huge sports agency group that it's time to focus not so much on the bottom line, but the people they're representing. You know, fewer clients, more personal relationships with them. And of course, that basically got him fired. And so in a race with his sort of arch nemesis / co-worker Jay Moore, Bob Sugar is the name of that character, Jerry Maguire is trying to round up all the clients he has currently to stay with him instead of leaving him for Bob Sugar. And the only one he can get to stay with him is Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Rod Tidwell. That's the character portrayed by Cuba Gooding Jr. And as he's on the phone, as we heard in that little clip, all of the other clients that were waiting for Jerry Maguire on the other line dropped off, leaving Jerry Maguire with one client and then soon to be one receptionist portrayed by Renee Zellweger. And Jerry Maguire is our first movie that isn't entirely about football. Like the other movies we've talked about really sort of are rooted in football, whether it's high school football, college football, studying pro football, you know, however you want to look at it. But this movie doesn't really sort of focus that much on football. It talks more about, you know, life and relationships. And football is obviously a big component to the movie. But, you know, when it came out, even though this movie did not only incredibly well at the box office, it did incredibly well overall. I mean, it was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including, you know, Best Actor for Tom Cruise, Best Editing, Best Picture, Best Screenplay, and Best Supporting Actor, Cuba Gooding Jr., who did win for that role. Roger Ebert, the late great Roger Ebert, the film critic from the Chicago Sun-Times, gave the movie 3 out of 4 stars, saying that there are so many subplots that Jerry Maguire almost seems too full. But he also goes on to say the film starts out looking cynical and quickly becomes a heartwarmer. Former Green Bay Packers Vice President Andrew Brandt said that the film accurately portrayed the cutthroat nature of the agent business, especially the lengths to which agents will go to retain or pilfer clients. It also captured the financial, emotional, and psychological investment that goes far beyond negotiating contracts. And that's one of the more interesting parts, particularly from a football aspect to this movie, because Tidwell's up for a new deal. You know, he's entering a contract season, and he gets an offer from Arizona, and it's below market. And Jerry Maguire, who's now struck out on his own with just one client who needs money, wants him to take it, but they decide not to. You know, the family, Tidwell and his wife, they decide, look, you know, they're going to just enter a free agency deal and earn a big contract. And the bulk of the movie has, you know, Tidwell out there saying that Jerry Maguire's not doing enough to get him that contract. Well, Jerry's coming back to Tidwell and saying that, look, your sort of like me first attitude isn't going to get you that big contract. It all sort of culminates on a Monday night game between Arizona and Dallas. Tidwell is playing extremely well, but then receives, looks like he gets seriously hurt while catching the game winning touchdown, which would get Arizona into the playoffs. But then he recovers, has that crazy dance, and it goes from there, you know. And it ends sort of that scene with, you know, Tidwell and Royce Firestone show. He gets the new contract, told to him on the air, an $11.2 million contract extension allows him to finish his pro career in Arizona, and he had played at Arizona State, so that's obviously meaningful to him. So, you know, the football undercurrents are more from a business standpoint, and as Brandt sort of described it, they're sort of the investment that goes into, you know, betting, in this case, Jerry Maguire's entire firm on just one guy. You know, it's not, like I said, not a pure football movie, but a movie that did very well, a very good screenplay from Cameron Crowe, who originally wrote this apparently for Tom Hanks, but it took him so long to write it. By the time he got done with it, Hanks was probably too old to play Jerry Maguire, so that's when it went to sort of Tom Cruise there. But definitely a movie that you should watch if you haven't watched it already. Some other, you know, interesting roles, you know, some cameos in there as well. Al Michaels, Frank Gifford, Roy Firestone, as we mentioned, Mike Tirico, Dan Dierdorf. A lot of athletes were into Katerina Witt, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, Mel Kiper Jr.'s in there because there's a plot line, obviously, with the draft coming up. Jim Irsay's in there as well. He makes a cameo as Jerry Maguire's boss. So it's a fun movie to watch. It has, you know, some interesting subplots to it. The football stuff has a nice undercurrent to the relationship aspect of the movie. And so if you haven't checked it out, Jerry Maguire, our latest movie on our summer football and film series. That will do it for today's show and tomorrow's show. Maybe do some timeline takes. I don't know what we'll do with the outset, but of course we'll have play 4 on our countdown of the top 10 offensive plays of the Patriots 2017 season. We're going to talk Patriots Bills there. Then we're going to talk our next movie on the football and film countdown. What's on tap there? Well, what's on tap is a trip to South Bend. Until then, keep it locked right here to me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots.